All right, it's close enough for us to for start time that we can go ahead and get started, I think. And it's just good to have everyone here. And our class is going to be somewhat different from the other classes. In fact, going to be a lot different from some of the other classes. But what we're going to look at is really critical to understand. To understand the Bible, and understanding Bible geography, which is what this is all about, will help you understand the topic we're going to discuss. But Bible geography is vital to fully understand God's revelation. I think we've proven that. I think if you've been in all of these classes, and it's not arrogant, but just the fact that we've been talking about Bible places and showing where they are, it helps you grasp. You don't know how far the Ethiopian eunuch came until you put a GPS, you know, one of those biblical GPS at the bottom of a map type thing, you know, and measure. I mean, he traveled 1,000 miles to get to Jerusalem to worship. You wouldn't know that. You wouldn't have a clue where Ethiopia was or anything if you didn't know Bible geography. And it may be more than 1,000 miles. How long does it take you to travel 1,000 miles in a chariot? You know, how many miles a day can you do? Can you do 50 miles a day in a chariot? You know, I don't know. Where are you going to stay every night? Where are you going to eat? How difficult is it to travel from Ethiopia all the way to Jerusalem? Until you become that Ethiopian eunuch and travel that distance and then understand what that distance is, it's an amazing thing that he's done. And that's what I mean whenever we say that Bible understanding Bible geography will really help us. And it begins in the book of Genesis, and it ends in the book of Revelation. Think about how many times, even in the prophets, Bible geography is mentioned. What about the Psalms? Yeah, the Psalms talk a lot about Bible geography. That's not the topic, but it mentions places in that. Let me see if I can say this. Did you ever sing a song, "Here I Raise My Ebenezer"? You know, we got a song leader who knows what song that's from. Do you know how many times you have sung that song, "Here I Raise My Ebenezer"? That's a geographical place. You raised your Ebenezer. When was the last time you raised your Ebenezer? Well, it's the last time you sang that song. You just didn't know what you were raising, did you? And until you know what Ebenezer is all about, and the biblical, it's a geographical place. And I believe, and I have to look this up every time we sing this song, by the way, it's "O Thou Fount of Every Blessing" is the name of that song. "O Thou Fount of Every Blessing, here I raise my Ebenezer, hither by thy help I've come." Isn't that amazing? You raise your Ebenezer and you don't even know what you raised. Well, it's a biblical event. And it was Samuel, I think it was Samuel, that meets King Saul and says, "God has been with us all the time in the past, and here's the future. And King Saul, you've jumped out ahead of God, trying to offer those sacrifices, and you had no right, even though I was not here. I said I would be here, and I was not here, and you started offering a sacrifice over there." And Samuel says, "No, he put a monument there. He put a stone monument and called it Ebenezer." And what does it mean? "I've come this far." And so it's Samuel who has looked at the providence of God and said, "In the past, God is always with me, and hither by thy help I've come. I've come from there to hear, and I'm here because of thy help. You know, I've been brought here. And that's what it means. When we sing that song, thou fount of every blessing, you know, tune thy ears to hear my praise, whatever that first verse says, whatever those words are, but you can't understand it. And the same thing about places in the Bible. And that's why I think it's so important to understand that. But I want you to understand, we are barely into the kindergarten part of looking at these matters. Entry level, I think, is the phrase. Gary, I remember a situation where you said, this is not an entry level situation. I remember when you said that, and when you said that, if you think about the circumstances under which you said it, I'll remind you of what it was. I filed it away. You don't know how many times I have used that expression to help me in my life. And it's just an expression I heard Gary use one time, and it's really helped me to deal with life and a whole. But it's not an entry level. I think entry level, you said, David, Gary, is the word that you used in relationship to this. But we're barely in kindergarten, and you can spend so much more time. And I would encourage you to get a good set of Bible maps or something, and you keep it wherever you study the Bible. If you've got an easy chair you study the Bible at, you need to have a good book of Bible maps there, so that you can read about a place and then go over there and find it. You know, this Bible is not, the maps in this Bible are really atrocious. But sometimes Bibles, and I don't think that this one does it, before it has, no, this one does not have it, but before the maps, they're listed alphabetically, and then they'll tell you what map to look at and use the grid that's left and right to find exactly where that place was. And so that's where we are in relationship to this. And if you've enjoyed this study, I want you to understand it. Now, I at one time had thought about, well, we need to look at Paul's missionary journeys. There's nothing like Bible geography. But we have an auditorium class coming up soon that will study Bible geography of Paul's missionary journey. It's not called Bible geography. But you cannot teach Paul's missionary journeys without having maps. You've got to know places and everything. And so I purposely chose to not get to that part. But I want us to look in this final class at the geography of probably a pivotal event on this earth, and that is the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. We've got to understand it. And you may think, well, this is not a whole lot about Bible geography. It's tied to Bible geography. Now, I say it's a pivotal event. Why? Because the worst tribulation there's ever been on this earth or ever will be on this earth happened in the year 70. You're talking about the tribulation, and I know the premillennial view of Jesus coming back and ruling on this earth has within it an idea that, well, that there will be the tribulation right before Jesus comes back. It has never happened. Well, we're going to see that it has happened, and it becomes pivotal. It doesn't seem to be that pivotal until you look at it in the framework of the Bible. And it's the worst time God ever brought judgment. The flood was not as great a tribulation as the destruction of Jerusalem. Isn't that amazing? In our minds, it's far greater. But Jesus said the destruction of that tribulation is the worst tribulation there has ever been or ever will be. The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, that's God's judgment, isn't it? What about when they came in and destroyed Solomon's temple? Whenever they took captive the Ark of the Covenant and captured the Ten Commandments. Because when those Ten Commandments were inside that Ark of the Covenant, when Solomon built that temple, the Bible specifically says that was the one thing that was inside that Ark of the Covenant at that time. I know at another time they had a pot of manna and Aaron's rod that budded. I know, I'm not denying that. But at that time, the only thing that was in there was the Ten Commandments. And God let Nebuchadnezzar come in and destroy Jerusalem and destroy, as far as we know, destroy the Ten Commandments. Isn't that amazing? That's not the worst tribulation there's ever been. And that's why I want to spend some time talking about that, because it is related. You'll need your Bibles. Look in Matthew chapter 23. If you want to see what we're talking about, look at Jesus in Matthew chapter 23. He has already, back in the previous chapter, come into the temple and turned all of the furniture upside down inside the temple. Just a day or two before this event is where Jesus comes into the temple, and for the second time, he did it early in his ministry on this earth, but for the second time comes in and drives out those animals. You know, he took that cord and used it and drove the animals outside of that. And if I'd been standing there, if he's using the cord on the ox, maybe I'm next. You understand? And so now in Matthew chapter 23, he publicly condemns the Jewish leaders and that nation. Luke, starting, I think, verse 29, we may need verse 28. He says in Matthew 23, in verse 28, it's verse 29. You scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn them as monuments of the righteous. What have they done? Well, here's the prophets, and they were all killed. In fact, there's a challenge somewhere in the Bible, which of your prophets did not die at your hands? And that's another verse. But he says, you know what you've done? Here are all the tombs of the prophets that your fathers killed. What are you doing? You're going out making monuments out of them. You're decorating them. You're making shrines out of the tombs of the prophets. Now, where did these prophets come from? He said, and you say, if we'd lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have killed the prophets. Isn't that amazing? My dad was really bad, this is their attitude, but I'm going to make up for it. And so the mistakes that he made, I'm going to decorate the monuments in him. And he says, you're saying, we didn't kill those prophets. And if we'd been alive back there, we would not have killed those prophets. And he says, I want you to listen to me. Have you never heard the expression, like father, like son? That's the way we said it. That's the way we, isn't it? Like father, like son? Vincent, you ever feel that? Anybody ever say, and it's so discouraging when they say, you started to look like your dad, you understand? Like father, like son. You understand that. Gary has the same problem in many respects. And he doesn't say you look like his dad. He's really thankful for that. Then he says, you are witnesses against yourself that you are the sons of those who kill the prophets. Like father, like son. And so he says, they did evil in killing the prophets, but the cup is not full. Fill up, therefore, here's it. Not all the prophets have come. Fill up, therefore, the cup the measure of your father's guilt. The cup of ungodliness that contains all of the evil of their fathers, the cup is not yet full. And he says to those leaders in his days, you are the ones who are going to fill up that cup. Fill up, therefore, the cup of your fathers. And then he says, serpents, brood of vipers, how are you going to escape the condemnation of hell? I don't think this is how you win friends and influence people, is it? I don't think this is how you become popular, become the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, you understand, politically speaking. He says, you are a bunch of vipers. Well, if you're a bunch of vipers, what was your fathers like? Well, your sons are the vipers, you understand? And that heart that they had is exactly the heart that you have. Now, then he says, let me show you the proof. Let me prove to you that you are just like your fathers, that you are really a nation of vipers. He says, therefore, indeed, I will send you prophets. That's Jesus talking. Your fathers were there when God sent the Old Testament prophets, but I am going to send prophets and men of wisdom, wise men, and scribes. If you read that closely enough, this is a prophecy that the New Testament would be written down. He sent the prophets to speak the words. He sent wise men to give wisdom. And this is New Testament age. It's what Jesus was just about to do when he ascends back into heaven. I'm ready to send the prophets to you and send wise men to you, and I will send scribes. Those holy men of the Old Testament that wrote down the words of God have their parallel with those who wrote the New Testament, inspired by God to write things down. I'm going to send you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you will kill. I'm going to send you the prophets. Let's see if you're like your fathers. What they do to the prophets? Some of them you will kill. Some of them you will scourge, and this is in your synagogues. Really? I thought you scourged somebody in the judgment hall of Pilate. Not this time. Have you read the book of Acts? Have you read the death of Stephen? Have you read the journeys of Paul and how many times he went into those synagogues? And they began to persecute New Testament prophets and wise men. And he says, and persecute them from city to city, comma, that upon you may come all the righteous blood ever shed on this earth. God has withheld judgment up until now. But starting with Cain shedding the innocent blood of Abel, from the blood of Abel until the blood of Zechariah, who was slain between the temple and the altars, whom you murdered between the temple and the altars, verily I say unto you, I am going to bring an accounting for judgment for all the righteous blood shed on this earth. You ever do that with your kids? I don't know if you've ever had multiple kids or not. You have only one child. You may not fully understand this, but if you've got one child and all of a sudden one of them does something wrong, and 5 minutes later another one does something wrong. Freddie, I see you smiling, okay? You know what I'm talking about. Pat, I see you smiling back there. You know, what's happened? I don't know what I've had it up to here. Isn't that amazing? I've had it. I've been as patient as long as I can. I should have done it when that first theme came up, and then the second one. And now we're all the way from all the righteous blood, and the Lord said, I've had it up here, and I'm going to show my judgment against every, I'm going to visibly show my judgment against every innocent blood that's ever been said. I've had it up to here. You understand, I've had it up to here. You just put up with it, put up with it, and put up with it. And finally, what happens? Your cup gets full. That's the language he used, isn't it? Fill up therefore the measure. God has been patient, and it's not an attribute of God, but as humans you'll understand it. His anger has about reached the boiling point. If you've had multiple children, you may know exactly what I'm talking about. It just adds up and adds up until finally you think, that's it. We're changing everything. And we did it. If you have multiple children, I suspect if your children are normal, and I think my children were normal, at least most of them were normal, and so you know, you got an understanding of that. Anyway, he says, verily I say unto you, all these things is going to happen in this generation. You see the word this? It's about to happen. Not the next generation, first century. It's going to happen this century. Now, you want to see the mercy of God? Here's the justice of God. You want to see the mercy of God? Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. How often I would have gathered you. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. But you were too stubborn. Got a picture of a thunderstorm coming? We don't see this unless you live on a farm. Oh, that mother hen, when that thunderstorm comes, she spreads out her feathers and everything, and those little chicks come. Bessie, you know what I'm talking about. You grew up with chickens like I did, you understand? You really understand that. Why? Storm's coming. And the Lord said, you know how many times? That's exactly what I wanted to be your protection. But you would not. And I've had it up to here. You turned to pagan gods instead of to me. And then he said to them, your house is desolate. And it took me a while to figure out exactly what he's saying until I read the next chapter. The next chapter, he goes into the temple. Isn't that amazing? He says, chapter 23, verse 24, then, after he said what he says in 23, Jesus went out and departed from the temple. You know where he's speaking in chapter 23? He's there in the courtyard of the temple. He's got the scribes and the Pharisees, got all of these Jewish leaders that's there, and he preaches a sermon of condemnation, and then he walks out. And he walks out and gets over to the Mount of Olives and sits down. You know what you can see from the Mount of Olives? What you can see from the Mount of Olives? put that fire scene up there. You see over here on the right, this is an artist's depiction. It's not an actual photograph. You see that place where the Roman army is encamped? That's where Jesus was, Mount of Olives. From the top of the Mount of Olives, you can look over and you can see the temple. You can see the city of Jerusalem. Now, this is a picture much, much later than that. This is somebody trying to depict what happened in AD 70. But that's where he goes. He walks outside the temple and he heads to the Mount of Olives. And while he's sitting at the Mount of Olives, his disciples come to him and talk to him. Well, he's departing from the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you not see all of these things? The time is coming when not one stone will be left upon another. And verse 3 says, where'd he go? To the Mount of Olives. And his disciples said, when's it going to happen? Well, he said, I'll give you the signs, wars and rumors of wars and pestilences and earthquakes and famines. But he said, that's only the start of it. In fact, he says, these wars and rumors of wars, these this is only the beginning. Verse what? Verse 8. 24:8. This is only the beginning of it. And so this destruction of this city was to be wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes like you've never seen. If they're just ordinary wars and ordinary rumors, that's not a sign of anything other than the sign that nothing ever changes. He says to the people that day, you are about to see the worst things that's ever happened, and God's wrath is about to be poured out, focused on this city and this house that has been the house of God, and you've already run God out of the house. It's your house, and your house is desolate, and not one stone will be left on top of another. Some of those stones... You'll understand this. Vincent, you may not be the carpenter your daddy is, but if I tell you those stones, some of them weighed 20 tons. Massive stones. Not one of those will be left on top of another. And then he says, oh, by the way, the gospel will be preached to all the world. And when that happens, the end comes. Back in verse 3, they said, what will be the sign of thy coming and of the sign of the end of the world, the King James says. It's not the word world if you've got another translation. You don't have the word world in another translation. The end of the age. Wait a minute. This temple's going to be destroyed? What will be the sign when that age ends? Here's what's going to happen. Before that happens, not one stone will be left upon another. The disciples did not ask two questions, as sometimes people study this. There's no way they could ask about the end of the earth and the fire that's coming on the earth at the last. Jesus had never even said anything about it. They couldn't even understand the coming of the church. How could they understand the coming to the end of the world, the physical world? As we use that expression, end of the world, talk about when Jesus comes back. That's not what they're saying. You said not one stone will be left upon another. What will be the sign when these things are going to happen? It's the end of the world, end of the age. And he says, all right, here's the things that are going to happen. And then he says, look at verse 32 of Matthew 24. He says, now learn the parable of a fig tree. Earthly story, heavenly meaning. I love the way David in his talking about the fulfillment of the parables. He's got the parables and then he steps over to the other side and gives the explanation. In fact, he's got this very stand, I think, when he comes over to the other side. I don't have two pulpits, but I'm going to let this be the pulpit area right here. Here's a parable. There's a fig tree. And when you see a fig tree and you see the leaves as they begin to come out, that when the branch becomes tender, you know that summer is near. Earthly story. Trees start blooming. You know that summer's on its way. Now, here's the application. When you see all of these things coming, not one stone will be left upon another. When's that going to happen, Lord? Well, he says, it's going to happen, and all these things are going to happen in this generation, destruction of that city. That's how critical this is. It is the end of the age. They're right in the way they described it. And then he said, mark it down. Heaven and earth are going to pass away. That's the next verses, isn't it? There's going to be a time whenever the end of the earth is going to happen. Heaven and earth. You want to know about the end of the earth? Yeah. Heaven and earth will pass away. But my words will not pass away. But of that day, the day of the end of the earth, there are no signs found in Matthew 24. I mean, words have meaning. Amen. And when Jesus said all these things are going to happen in this generation, they had to happen in that generation. I may have trouble understanding some of the language that's there, but not a one of us has any trouble understanding when he says, you're going to see all these things happen in this generation. Not that generation, not some future generation. You will see the tree as it blooms, because the tree is going to bloom in your lifetime. And you're going to say, the end is here. What end? The end of all things. End of what things? All they say they've been talking about. You want to know the signs? Yeah, there's no signs after that. Of that day and hour knows no man. There's no sign. He's coming as a what? As a thief in the night. If you had a sign the thief was going to be in your house tonight, what would you do? Would you lock the door? Would you, I don't know if you got a gun, but would you put a baseball bat near the bed? You understand what I'm talking about? If you knew he's coming tonight, what would you do? Of that day knows no man. Of that day and hour knows no man. He comes as a what? Thief in the night. He didn't come as a thief in the night whenever the city of Jerusalem was destroyed. And he said, that's why all of these things are going to happen. Now then, go back to that slide called the Greatest Tribulation. I think it's the one right that says, he prophesied this would happen even before they entered the promised land. Do we even have time to go to that verse? What time is it?
It's 9:32 a.m.
Thank you very much. I didn't want you to say it out loud. I just wanted to look down there, you know. I didn't even ask Siri. Siri is good sometimes, asking, giving you information I didn't really want, but I wanted what time it was. It's 9:32. Deuteronomy 28. Here's a prophecy. It's before they ever enter into the promised land. You remember how the Lord said, I'll bless them that bless you and curse them that curse you? Here it is. Deuteronomy 28, it's got 60-something verses in it. We're not going to look at all 60 of them. We don't have time because it's 9:33 right now. He says you're about to enter into that land. And I want you to look in verse 5 how every word of the next several verses start with the same word. Blessed, 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 blessed. And if it's not blessed, it's a description of a blessing. And he sums it up by saying, he says, verse 12, the Lord will open up to you the good treasures of the heavens, the treasures of the heavens, and rain on your season and bless for all your works, because you are going to be blessed more than anybody. Now then, verse 15, but, you see the word but? Contrasting. What if you don't do what God says? Then every curse that was pronounced as a blessing is going to come upon you. That is exactly what is going to happen. And he said, and you will be scattered all over this earth. And he says, if you do not carefully observe all the words of this law that are written in this book. I'm reading verse 58. We don't have time to read from verse 16 through 58. I wish we did. There's some real powerful stuff in there because there's a statement about the coming of Jesus in that. But he said, if you do not, verse 58, if you do not carefully observe all the words of the law that are written in this book, that you may have the glorious and awesome name, that you may fear the glorious and awesome name, Jehovah your God, the Lord will bring upon you destructions and extraordinary plagues, great and prolonged plagues, serious and prolonged sicknesses. He will bring on you all the diseases of Egypt of which you were afraid, and they shall cling to you. And then he says, verse 62, you shall be left few in number wherever you go, as the stars of the heaven, because you would not obey the Lord. It shall be that just as the Lord has rejoiced over you, verse 63, he will rejoice over you to destroy you and bring you to nothing, and you shall be plucked out of the land, and you will be scattered among all the people from one end of the earth to the other, and there you'll serve other gods which neither you nor your fathers have known, wood and stone. And among those nations you shall find no rest, nor shall the sole of your feet find a resting place. Can I say the word anti-Semitic as a description of this world that has been characteristics of the Jews from this very day, from that very day, when he scattered them in AD 70. And you'll find no rest. Mark it down. God being true, what's happening politically over there is not the end of the story, because there's no end to that story. In the morning you'll say, oh, that it were evening. Evening you'd say, oh, that it were morning. You will be miserable and unhappy all the days of your life. And AD 70 is when it all happened. And so so we've looked at these verses, I guess, in Matthew 23, I think we've looked at that. We put those verses up there. That's the one I ask you to open your Bibles up. Okay, let's look at the Great Revolt. Here's that which we do not know. Before we look at the Great Revolt, look at the map. I think it's the next slide. That will help us. It's the only map we've got in today's study. But I want you to see, and you won't be able to see it because I'm going to have to walk all the way back. Do you see the word Great Sea over there on the left side of the screen? If you look from that right where that A is ends and going right over, you see the word Galilee? You see those two big ones. You see a little tiny word you can't read underneath that? That's a geographical place. And I've got it, and I put this map up so we'll know what's going to happen. That's where it's going to happen. It's called Ptolemais. Starts with a P and followed with a T. Let's go back to the previous slide. The Jews call this the First Jewish-Roman War. They also call it the Great Revolt. You can Google this, and you will be amazed at what you find about what's happened. It's the year 66. The Jews defeated the Roman governor in 66. Christ has already been in heaven, ascended into heaven. And so the Jews have revolt against Rome. And they'd been a thorn in the Roman side from the time they were given birth as a nation. And so they revolt and they defeat the governor and his army and run him out of the city, the Roman official. And Nero decrees the end of Jerusalem. and sends Vespasian and his son Titus to bring an end to Judaism. He was up in Samaria. Go back to the map slide, if you would. I think Samaria is there. Up, you see where Syria is? Yes. Up in that area, if you can see Damascus, which is the last little word right on the top right side of that, and keep going north a little bit of that, and that's where Antioch. He was stationed up there, had a Roman legion up there. And so Nero says to Vespasian, get down and destroy Jerusalem. And so he brings his army to Galilee from Antioch, and he began his work. At his first battle, he captures a commander of the Jewish army. There were two primary ones whose name was Josephus. Heard that name? I think you have. He is a Jewish historian. He's not only a Jewish commander, he's a Jewish historian. And he gives a written description of what all happens as that Roman army comes down. It'll help you begin to understand why it was the worst tribulation ever. Josephus is available on your smartphone. You can just download, if you can download anything on your smartphone, just download Josephus. Now, it's 1,000 pages. So look in the section that says the wars of the Jews. The first section that he writes about is the history of the Jews, and he'll even tell you how many sons Adam and Eve had. He doesn't know it, but he'll tell you. Does that make sense? Because he tells you sort of what they believed about how many sons Adam and Eve had. He gives a number, you understand? And so that is so fascinating to read his view of Jewish history written from a Jewish viewpoint of the Old Testament. And it favors the Jews a lot. But when it comes down to the wars of the Jews, he's the one who tells us, you got to get over to book 4 or 5. You know, it's like a volume 4 or 5, Wars of the Jews. What's that on series? Year, season 1 and episode 1. Season 5, I think it's either book 5 or book 6, and get down and read about the destruction of Jerusalem. It will turn your stomach. They were eating their own flesh. Why did they do that? There's no food left in there. Because Vespasian comes down and surrounds the city. In fact, the Bible in the book of Luke says he'll dig a trench around this city. And that's exactly what he did. He dug a trench around that city and any Jew that was captured. Once the rumor got out that they've got all these jewels in Jerusalem and they're swallowing the jewels. That's how they're taking the jewels out of the city. When the Romans got word, in one night, they disemboweled 500 Jews who were trying to flee the city. He killed 2,000 of them who got caught in the trench as they were surrounded. And then he started crucifying them. And he kept crucifying them and crucifying them until they ran out of wood to build a cross, to build any more crosses, and no place to put any more crosses. God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that shall he reap. I remember 3 crosses. You could walk out to look out the walls of the city and see 3 crosses. And Josephus says, I was outside the walls, and let me tell you what I saw. Crosses everywhere. No more wood. No more place to put crosses. Don't have time, but we'll have to talk later because I've only got 2 minutes, okay? And I know you want to say something. Say it quick.
They
Yeah, that's what I mean. Disembowel. They cut them out at stomach and bowels and everything to try to. They were alive. I mean, they came out. Okay, you got jewels. Let me open up the. Let me open up that. Open up and see if you've got jewels inside there. That's what they were doing. I'm sorry, and thank you for making that very vivid. Thank you. Josephus was there, and then they started eating the animals. There were no varmints left in the city. No more gopher rats. No more rats. They started eating the hay. They started chewing the leather of their belts. Talking about jerky? What about dry jerky? What about that kind? And eating cow dung. And in that city, when they breached the walls, they breached it more than once, but the Jews at one time had so many bodies that whenever they tore down the walls, overnight the Jews drove them back, and overnight they raised up a new wall made up of human bodies of people that had died in that city. 1.1 million Jews. You're talking about a Holocaust that lasted 3 or 4 or 5 years. Holocaust at Jerusalem lasting. I've got one other thing on this slide, and that is thing down to last. From Nero's decree until this came, the destruction of the city, it's 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days. Does that ring a bell? Read the book of Revelation, which is a book of things which must shortly happen in the first century. That's it. We didn't have enough time to go everywhere I wanted to go, but that's far enough.
Thank you, Dad.
And that's Bible geography, though it may not seem like it.